today with Annette Salmon Sagerman for the Jewish Community Center Family History Project. The date today is April 1st, 1991, and I would like to present Annette to you. Annette, would you please give us your name, address, and if you wish, your phone number?
I am Annette Salmon Sagerman, 3320 Kawan Way, 458-5180.
Thank you very much. What were your parents' names, please?
My father was Jacob Salmon. My mother was Eva Kaplan Salmon.
They're no longer living?
No, because my parents were living.
Were they born in Louisville?
No, my father was born in Russia, in Riva, Courland, which was what was then Latvia, and he took a great deal of pride in the fact that he could say he was a Litvak. He came to this country as a young man to escape the Tsar's army, actually, I suppose, and was going to yeshiva in Russia and later in Cleveland, and knew all the time that he didn't choose to be a rabbi, but discovered that in this country one of the freedoms that one enjoyed is that of choice of one's vocation. And since his parents were still in Russia, he made the judgment that he would not like to be a rabbi. And he had an uncle, my great uncle. My uncle, by the way, may have been known to a number of people here. He was the old man Hamburg, as he was referred to, who had what I now realize must have been a pawn shop. We used to consider it a secondhand store on Preston Street between Liberty and Jefferson. And this old man, by the way, was later murdered there many years later. But my father came to Louisville when he decided not to be a rabbi and settled here because he had an uncle.
Because of his uncle. What about your mother?
My mother was born and reared in St. Louis.
Uh-huh.
And my mother came to Louisville because she came here on a visit, actually. She had an uncle, again, who was probably known by some old-timers who I don't know if still exist, but Nathan Gold was her uncle, her mother's brother, and he came here for the same reason that my other great-uncle came. United Highest distributed people around when they came to this country.
What is United Highest?
It's the Hebrew Immigration, whatever AS stands for, something, Aid Society, Hebrew Immigration Aid Society. And when people came to this country in the early 1900s, the Highest distributed them around the country, much as as we try to do with our Soviet immigrants now.
How interesting. I've not heard of that before.
Yes, they tried to get many of them off the East Coast.
Uh-huh.
And it just happened that my Uncle Hamburg was sent to Louisville by Hyatt, and my mother had an uncle who was sent here. And on a personal note, I have to tell you that my mother came here to soothe a broken heart. She had become engaged to someone of whom her mother disapproved. And in those days, a mother could tell her child, no, you won't marry him. So she broke her engagement and came here to soothe her broken heart.
And to visit the uncle.
To visit this uncle.
But tell me, you said your mother was born in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Where did her parents come from?
They were both from St. Louis.
Her parents also?
My grandparents were also from St. Louis.
Well, do you know, can you trace their history as to how they got to St. Louis?
Not really. I really don't know exactly. I know that my grandfather had a previous marriage, and I don't think his first wife ever got to this country. He came here ostensibly to earn money, I think, to send for his family. The children were sent on ahead. My mother had two sisters who were from her father's previous marriage. And they came to this country. And then I don't think his first wife ever got here. Now, whether she chose not to, whether she died before she came here, because she did die very young, but I really don't know because she was not my grandmother. My grandfather then married the lady he met, who was my grandmother.
And was she born in St. Louis?
And she was born in St. Louis.
And you do not know about
No, I don't know that any. I don't know anything.
Well, it's interesting if you do. Sometimes you do and sometimes you don't.
Yeah, I have. I'm sorry to say that I have a great deal of interest in it without any ambition to dig up the family. And unfortunately, longevity is not my family's strong suit.
Well, you said your mother had two sisters.
My mother had two sisters from that previous marriage. There were eight of them all together.
Oh, really?
My mother had five sisters in it, and my mother, there were six daughters, who followed her to Louisville after she married my father and settled in Louisville. And she became lonely for her family. She brought one sister down here who had married, and she told her that this Louisville was indeed the land of milk and honey. And she lured my aunt and uncle here, and I have to assume he found a job and everything was okay there. But this sister was a year and a half younger than my mother, which was the sin of sins to have married before my mother. But since my mother's romance didn't work out in St. Louis, her sister was given special permission to marry there. And she had two children, and then she moved here because my mother was lonely for her. And then the sister who moved here was one of twins. So she found it very difficult to be here without her twin sister. So my aunt sent for the second sister to come down. And then when my grandparents realized that they had three children in St. Louis and three children in Louisville, and Louisville was spoken of so glowingly, they decided that they would move here, so they moved here with their other two children.
Very interesting.
And that's how they all settled in Louisville.
So they all became Louisvillians.
Yes, right.
What about
my aunt married here?
What about your father? Was he did he come here, or did he have any relatives that came here other than the uncle?
Oh yes. Then after my father got here, and after he saved up enough money to send for a member of his family, he bought a violin instead. And by the way, I
bought what?
A violin.
Oh really?
And I still am the proud possessor of that violin. I treasure it. It is dated 1905.
Uh-huh.
And that was when he didn't have food to eat. And hadn't saved the amount of money he was supposed to save to send for the next members of his family. But he did indeed then save money, and he sent for his parents, and they had two children whom they brought with them. And then they had, unfortunately, a number of children that even my father couldn't remember. I mean, they died very young in Europe before they ever
and
got
the
here.
Name of the place in Latvia again? The name?
Greva, Courland. Courland was the state, Greva was the city.
Oh, uh-huh.
And there are some people here in Louisville who live there.
That's the part of this whole family history we're trying to do, is that certain people came from certain places mm-hmm. to Louisville, and they will be repeated over and over again.
Yes, it will indeed, because this was as it happens, some of these people, not because they followed each other, but they just happened to have found themselves in Louisville when they had originated from the same shtetl in Europe.
Tell me, now, your maiden name was Simon.
Right.
Did you have sisters or brothers?
I had sisters or brothers. I had no brothers. I had two sisters. I am the second daughter. There were three of us. Unfortunately, both of my sisters have passed away. They say longevity is not one of our chief virtues. I was born on 7th and Oak, which was not one of the more exclusive areas, but we had a business there.
What kind of business?
We had a grocery store and meat market, and I was born on November 3rd, 1924, which is when Calvin Coolidge was elected.
And same day?
Yes. Uh-huh. And my older sister used to tell the story that there were, in those days, the young people who hear this won't know what it is, but there were extras on the streets when there weren't television sets, and even radio, I guess, wasn't terribly prevalent. When a big news event occurred, they would put out what they called an extra edition of the newspaper. And the newsboys would stand out on the street and call extra, extra. And that's what was called an extra edition. And, of course, all the excitement was that Calvin Coolidge had been elected, but my sister, who was 6 years old at that time, thought that all of the excitement was because she had had a new little sister. So she thought that I was born in a historical moment.
Well, you were. You really were. Annette, you said your father came here from Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Do you know what year he came here?
He came here in 1905. Don't ask me how I know that, but it just... I remember his having said.
And your parents were married then
here in
Louisville?
They were married here in Louisville. No, they were married in St. Louis.
Oh, they were.
And then they moved to Louisville. No, my mother's home, until mm-hmm. she married, was in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved to Louisville. They were married on July 3rd so that they could come to Louisville for some kind of a big celebration at the old YMHA on the 4th of July. And that was, I think, the way they spent their honeymoon with the YMHA.
That's a wonderful beginnings for the YMHA, of course.
We have been YMHA-oriented, I guess, ever since.
Where you lived, was it an area where you had... did grandparents or aunts and uncles live in the same house with you?
No, no. At that time, we lived where we did for a very short time because it was near our business. We later moved, for no particular reason that I can think of, I mean, geographically, but we moved to 1428 South Floyd Street. That was on Floyd Street between Woodbine and Burnett. I don't even know if the street still exists.
Do you tell me how old you were approximately when you moved there?
Well, I was preschool age because I remember that... I did actually start first grade at George H. Tingley School, and I went there for just a few weeks when my family, again, moved to 109 East St. Catherine, and that was in the Englehart School District, and I started first grade at Englehart School.
What do you remember your neighborhood like, either any of the three?
Well, Floyd Street, I was really too young. But I remember 109 East St. Catherine because we lived downstairs from the Goldsteins and down the street from the Perskys, and Mr. Persky was the Shechet and the Moel here at that time. And I remember it was my first or probably only exposure to truly Orthodox, but ultra-Orthodox people. And they were, it was a whole new experience for me.
Did your parents belong to a congregation?
My parents joined Attis Jeshurun Congregation the day after Rabbi Gittleman assumed the pulpit there
right.
in 1917. And Rabbi Gittleman became our human deity almost from the day we were born. But that was after both my father and mother had Orthodox backgrounds, but my father, who had decided not only not to be a rabbi, but at one point until my mother, I guess my mother was one of those lucky wives who could say no. My father had made all kinds of plans to be an atheist, but my mother said no. So he wasn't an atheist, but the compromise was that they were not Orthodox, they became conservative.
Oh, what else do you remember about your neighborhood? Do you remember, did it have a drugstore?
Oh, yes,
grocery
we
store?
Walked down to Fisher's drugstore.
How far was
and
that?
And bought popsicles, like a half block. And we bought popsicles, and they were twin popsicles for a nickel. And one day it was my day to pay, and one day it was somebody else's day to pay. And I had a younger sister and an older sister, and one day my younger sister, Selma Jean, followed me to Fisher's drugstore because I wouldn't take her. And got hit by a car because I was supposed to have been watching her, but I was trying to act like she wasn't there. And I was just about hysterical over that. So from then on, I had to promise to take her in hand and share my popsicle with her.
Not going
to atone for this terrible,
of course,
experience.
Well, you mentioned some of your neighbors. And did you walk to school?
Yes, we were just a couple of blocks from the school. It so happens, we were kind of spoiled brats. In fact, I had a man ask me a number of years ago now, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, whether I have ever been in the rain. And I didn't quite get the significance until he reminded me he used to deliver to my father's store. And if it looked like rain, or if it had rained yesterday, or looked like it was going to rain tomorrow, certainly if it were raining at that minute, my father dropped everything and ran to pick up his children so that they didn't walk home in the rain. So we were just a couple of blocks, but we used to get pretty good pickup and delivery service. At that time, my mother was one of the few mothers who drove a car.
That is unusual.
Most mothers didn't drive cars. The one mother of a friend of mine in later years who drove a car had a husband who had a severe heart condition, so she had to drive the car, and that was the only lady I knew who drove a car. So my mother was a Jewish mother taxi driver long before it was fashionable.
You said you belonged to Abt Shur. Did you go to Sunday school there?
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, I went with you. Mm-hmm. I went to all through Sunday school there. I remember as a small child, and I've told Rabbi Schlossberg this, because I, without having done the arithmetic, I imagine Rabbi Gibelman was something close to the age that Rabbi Schlossberg is now, or perhaps even as he was when he came to Louisville. And Rabbi Gibelman used to swing us when he used to come visit us. He used to pick us up and swing us.
And you mean in his hands? Or?
Yeah, in his hands.
Oh,
he'd
really?
Pick us up and swing us, and that was a big treat when he'd come into his lesson Sunday school in those downstairs rooms.
Oh, you mean in the school room?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We, in those downstairs rooms in the basement of the old Abt Shur on Brooklyn College.
I remember those.
Well, our kindergarten class was out in the, in the entranceway.
Yeah.
One of our regular rituals as Sunday school students was that we went to synagogue on Saturday, and then afterward from Brooklyn College we'd walk downtown and go to what was then called Lerner's Delicatessen, or Lerner's Restaurant. It was on 3rd and Walnut, and in those days I didn't want to eat trace, so we used to get a hot dog and Coke for 16 cents, the extra penny being a sales tax that we had at that time. It was 10 cents for a kosher hot dog, and if you wanted to eat trace, you could get one for a nickel, and a nickel for the Coke.
Was this a kosher restaurant?
Yes, yes it was. And if you really wanted to live dangerously, and I was accused of being a little tight, you could get a corned beef sandwich for 12 cents, but I just couldn't be that extravagant and pay the extra 2 cents. Now, my friends did, and then we'd go to the movies, which cost us 16 cents, and...
Where were the movies located?
Well, the Strand was on Walnut Street. Chestnut Street, that's right. And then we went to the Strand. Oh, sure, it was across the street from where Lerner's was on 3rd Street, that's right. And then we'd go to the Lowe's or the Rialto that was on 4th Street. Some of the Thin Man pictures were at the Mary Anderson. But the only thing wrong with that was it was only a single feature, and it spoiled some of the fun because we wanted a double feature for the same money.
I can understand that.
So, and Hayden Reed, do you remember Hayden Reed
playing
the organ?
At the
Lowe's Theater. And we could spend a whole day there.
Do you remember the bouncing ball?
Oh, absolutely. I even remember some of the words and some of the parodies he used to have on the screen. When we used to sing the story of the glory of love, and he had some parodies to that.
Oh, really?
Oh, it was fun. Sure, I remember the
slide.
You
want as much for your money as possible.
That's right. So we used to have a fun time with that.
You were talking about you wanted to eat kosher, you didn't want to eat trace. Was your household kosher? I mean, did you have trouble with kosher?
I have to tell you a very ridiculous story, but it is the honest to goodness truth. I had always assumed that my house was kosher. Nobody had told me that it was. On the other hand, nobody had told me that it wasn't. In 1937, you may recall, we had a flood. And
Where did you live?
I lived at 110 West Hill.
Okay.
In an apartment building. The Cherneys lived on the second floor, Marvin Alvin and Ethel Cherney. And the Weinbergs, Zalman Weinberg and Alfred Weinberg's parents, lived on the third floor across the hall from us. And we all had what we called refugees because we thought we were all safe for from floodwaters. Now, I know I'm skipping a lot of hearing in between, but when you ask about kosher, I have to tell you.
Yes, of course.
In my house, we had my grandmother and my aunt and uncle and their four children. And the Cherneys had the Robinsons, and the Weinbergs had the Snows, I remember. So we all pooled our resources and shared our food as far as it would go, and there was a signal that you used to put in your window. We had water out in front of our house and we couldn't leave. So you put a lantern in your window, and that meant when the Red Cross was boating in front of your house, if they saw a lantern, they knew that you needed food. So they brought food and we shared it. And one of the things that they brought was a case, or maybe cases, of Campbell's chicken noodle soup. And I mentioned to my older sister that my mother was such a good sport that she had given us this chicken noodle soup and put it in her pots, even though it wasn't kosher. And I was so amazed that she was such a good sport about it, she didn't even complain. And my sister said, "Well, do you think that we are kosher?" And I said, "You mean we're not?" Well, she thought it was a riot. And I never asked. Nobody ever said what I asked my mother. "Is our house kosher? Are we kosher?" My mother said, "No." And it was never a secret for me, but I thought it was. That's when maybe we stopped going to Learners, because my girlfriends didn't like going there.
That's great. A lot of people, I guess, that's when they perhaps stopped. They never really even started. And probably there was just never any mixture of meat and milk.
I was just going to say that, yes. Uh-huh. And to this day, in my house, I don't mix milk and meat. I'm not kosher, but I don't mix milk and meat. And I guess that's a throwback to my childhood, where I never saw anything blatantly not kosher.
Mm-hmm.
So I just assumed it.
What do you remember as far as the way your family celebrated various holidays? Is there anything particular?
It's funny. It's very fresh in my mind at the moment, because this being Passover, I relive, why do I work so hard and why do I change dishes? I change dishes on Passover.
Yeah, really?
And we have two seders, and we have what we call Shabbos now, Shabbat dinners on Friday nights. They are not traditional. We don't have chicken soup and chicken filter fish necessarily and that sort of thing. But the family still gets together, and this is a throwback to my childhood, that we did all of the rituals. We bench lift, and I still do, or actually my niece Jay bench lift in my home on Shabbos.
Do you get together?
Yes.
On Shabbos,
mm-hmm.
For dinner too?
Every Friday night.
That's wonderful.
And I don't want to apologize for being religious, except it's not necessarily a religious ritual. It's a family custom that began with my parents.
It's a tradition.
And it's just
following.
Traditional. And it's the same kind of thing. I mean, we get together on Hanukkah, and we have our blintzes together on Shavuot. And we have two seders. Again, I don't want to sound like I have to explain religious, but we're not religious. We just are very traditional, and we observe the rituals. As I think back now, I think that much of everybody's present is involved with his or her past. My mother became very active at the Attic Desheren Sisterhood. And as a result, whenever there were plays and that kind of thing, and they seemed to have been big on those, because I guess they didn't have money to bring in lecturers as we do now.
Do you remember
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember some of the things like cafeteria suppers and the
picnics? At Summers Park,
uh-huh.
And at Sennings Park, and my mother cooked for them. And Ada Klein, Merle Klein's mother, kicked us out of the kitchen when we'd come in to ask my mother for a dime to go buy something or something. She'd kick us out of the kitchen because they were too busy and we were annoying the help. But my mother was very active in the sisterhood, and at Summers Park and at Sennings Park. And when they had plays at the Sunday school, I was always in the plays, and my mother thought that I had some kind of talent. It was only in later years that we discovered that the real reason I was always in the plays was that We didn't have PA systems in those days, and I always had a voice that carried, and they could hear me out in the auditorium when I would speak from the stage, so I would get all these parts in the plays because that could be heard readily and because I memorized fairly easily. My mother was heartbroken in later years to learn that it wasn't my talent. My mother was also very active in Hadassah. But somehow, I guess, Hadassah didn't have to encourage people to come to the meetings the way the sisterhoods did. And I think the sisterhood used to do that by putting kids in plays and then making their mothers come to see them perform. And I have in my possession a picture of you and me and a bunch of other little girls and boys in a Tom Thumb wedding.
Really?
That we were in at Attic this year, and that I'll have to bring and show to you sometime.
Maybe a copy of that should go into the archives.
I would never give it up, but if they want a copy of it, they may have it. But I have it framed, and
really?
I'll bring it here and show it
I'd
to
love
you.
To see it.
But it, my mother was very much involved in the sisterhood and in Hadassah.
Was your father involved in any of the men's organizations?
No, I really don't think so. I think my father was very busy making a living, and not that all fathers weren't, but I guess maybe, I never thought about it, but I guess maybe it wasn't his cup of tea.
But he did go to services
and,
regularly.
Oh, yes, yes, he went. Well, not regularly. No, we were not regular service goers. We did go to Shul on Saturdays because that was expected of us.
Did
no,
your
he
father?
Didn't accompany us, no. My mother, neither my mother nor my father, actually, I think they probably worked in the store.
Mm-hmm.
And we went with our friends.
Tell me something about being an only child. I can't really appreciate what it's like to have siblings. Tell me something about you and your two sisters.
Well, as we were growing up, I didn't think that, I mean, in my very early years, I didn't think that having siblings was such a big deal. I am glad to be able to say that long before they passed away, I did learn to appreciate my sisters, and I have to say, they learned to tolerate me. I was a middle child and had every syndrome that a middle child is entitled to. My two sisters were 12 years apart. Each of us was, my older sister was 6 years older than I. My younger sister was 6 years younger than I. And they really got along beautifully with each other and liked each other a great deal. They didn't like me as much.
Uh-huh.
I was really a typical middle child. I was the least attractive, certainly the least outgoing.
You're putting yourself down.
It's true, it's honestly true. In fact, they used to accuse me of being daddy's pet, and perhaps I was, but I was because my daddy really felt that he had to compensate for the fact that my sisters really liked each other better than they liked me, and I fought with my older sister and I fought with my younger sister. And I was always reminded when my older sister got to go someplace or do something that I couldn't do that she's 6 years older than I. And when my younger sister had an advantage, well, she was the baby. And that's, I think my father really did try very hard to compensate. I was a typical middle child. And they were both attractive and very friendly, very social, and I was none of those things. So I became the student in the family, which didn't make me any great scholar, but it made me work much harder to excel where I could do best.
How much schooling, how far in school did you go? What schools did you go to? You said Englehart.
I went to Englehart School with a lot of the kids who I kid. A lot of the old people who I see around here now.
Very young people.
Yes, absolutely. Well, let me tell you, Betty, that youth is not something that I envy. I am 66 years old, and I don't want to be 65. Honestly, I have never lied about my age. I always lie about my weight. In fact, I just don't even discuss it. But I like being old.
You're and not old. You are at the first day of the rest of your life.
Absolutely, and I love it. I feel very fortunate. I have lived longer than any member of my family, believe it or not. Nobody lived to 66 in my family. My parents were each 53.
Really?
And my older sister was 47. My younger sister was 55. So they all passed away. So my older sister, by the way, married. My sister was Lorraine. She taught Sunday school at Attic Deshurin from the time she was 18 years old until almost the week before she passed away. And there are a couple of generations.
What was her married name?
Heinerthug.
She had any children?
She had two daughters, Jay Heinerthug Sparber, who lives here in Louisville now, and her younger daughter, Sherry Heinerthug Toman, who lives in Reston, Virginia.
Sounds like there are a lot of girls in your family.
We had girls. Now, Jay had two boys, which was the shock of our lives. My mother was one of eight girls.
I know, I heard you say that.
My father had seven sisters and just my father and his brother.
Oh, you didn't say that.
There were only the two boys in the family. Unfortunately, this had another disadvantage. Both the Kaplan name and the Simon name have died with my generation.
Well, the Wells name is gone, so I can appreciate
really?
That.
Really? There
yes,
were no, my uncle had no children and my father had no boys.
Because I was going to ask you if you had, with your mother's sisters being here and if with your father's family being here, if you had cousins. And if
I think I do have cousins. Some of my cousins have passed away, but I do have cousins here. The Margulises were my cousins, and then unfortunately all three of them have passed away. Harold and Lester Margulis and Mildred Margulis Byer. My mother's other sisters were, one of them was a Miller, and Anita Miller Rothman is my cousin. And another one was Rose Kaplan Levitz, and Arnold Levitz is my cousin. So that, and then there are a couple of cousins, the Goldbergs, who live in Los Angeles and in Tucson. And then there was another sister who married another Goldberg. And then my father's family were all girls also, except for my father and Charlie Simon, who had the delicatessens here. And he started his delicatessen business, by the way, by having bought a store that, again, you and I wouldn't know about, although I do sort of remember it. Feidelson's on Preston and Jefferson.
I remember hearing the name.
Well, the first Mrs. Feidelson was a Simon.
Oh.
And yes, that was my father's sister.
Oh, really? And because it used to be, I know, that Feidelson and corned beef was synonymous.
Exactly. And that's where my Uncle Charlie got his training, was at my Aunt Gussie Feidelson, who later, by the way, who had two children, one of whom was Libby Fox, Dr. Gary Fox's mother. And there was another daughter who died. Uncle Charlie went into the delicatessen business before World War II. He bought out Feidelson's. And that was probably like in 1939. In about 1942, and I'm not absolutely sure of the dates, but pretty close, he opened a store. He moved from there because there was no more Jewish community centered around that area as there had been when the Feidelsons had been there. And he took his corned beef secrets with him and moved to 3rd and Jefferson. Jefferson between 3rd and 4th. It was 330 West Jefferson. And he remained there.
How long was he there? I remembered so well.
Till after World War II. And then he moved to Florida. And he lived in Florida for about 10 years and then came back here and opened up on Bonnie Castle, Bardstown and Bonnie Castle.
How he got to Bardstown Road, because that's what I was wondering
about. That was
about.
In later years when the Jewish community by that time didn't exist downtown. And as I say, he took his corned beef secrets with him to Florida and
I
then back to...
I wish he'd left them someplace since we don't have a good, or we don't have a kosher delicatessen in
There is
in
no
Louisville.
Such... I think someplace I left off in the middle that my older sister had two daughters, and that's how we got sidetracked, that the girls running our family. And Jay Heinerthug Sparber, Lorraine's daughter, had two boys, Lane Sparber, who is named after Lorraine, and Jared Sparber. And my younger niece, in order to be sure, well, for many reasons, but one of them was to be sure that she had girls, adopted hers, so she adopted two girls. So we do now have some girls in the family again. But I feel very fortunate that for one who doesn't have, and I guess I should have mentioned someplace in there, I got married.
Yes,
and
when did you get married?
I got married on April 12th, 1953. My husband, David Sagerman, was working here in Louisville at that time.
Where's he from?
He came here from New Jersey by way of Europe, actually. David was born in Russia.
Oh, really? You know the name of the town?
He's Grubna Gubernia, and I don't know what that means or where it is. David's family was living in this whatever shtetl where they were living. His father was killed in a pogrom.
Oh.
Does
he remember it?
No, he was an infant. He was either 1, 2, or 3, depending upon how my mother-in-law told the story. We were never quite sure of David's age. We picked the closest age to Social Security, and I don't mind being an old man's darling, so he's 6 years older than I am. He may either be 5 or 4 years older than
I am. Okay, now how come he came from this village? What made him come to Louisville?
It's a peculiar kind of a story, but my mother-in-law and father-in-law and their two children lived in this shtetl, and when the soldiers, the Russian soldiers, came through the town, my mother-in-law picked up David and took him out to the barn to hide. The father never got out of the house with the other child. So my father-in-law was stabbed, but the saber that went through my father-in-law went first through the child who he was holding, went in and out of David's brother, and fortunately didn't hit any vital organs, and went into the father and killed him.
Killed the father, but not the child.
But he remained with this, or he lived with the remains of this injury for the rest of his life, and many years later in World War II was discharged from the Navy because of this old injury.
Really?
He had been hit on the back of the head with the back of the saber, and he had a place on his head where hair never grew. My mother-in-law picked up her two children, and she never knew how to explain how she accomplished this, but she ran away to Antwerp, Belgium, and she had a sister who lived in Staten Island, New York. And somehow found herself, we have the manifest of the ship on which she came.
Do you?
And she somehow got to this country. She never quite knew how she managed it. But with two children, and she had to smuggle my brother-in-law, Ed, David's brother, in because he had an injury. And when they got to Ellis Island, she had kept this head wound covered with a cloth. The body wound she was able to keep covered with his clothing.
Annette, this manifest that you say you have, is there any way you could make a copy for us so we can have it in our archive?
Oh, I'd be delighted. It's very interesting.
I'm sure it must be.
It tells the ages of the people who were on this ship and where they were coming from. And by the way, how much money they had on them.
Oh, really?
And my mother-in-law, it seems, had something like $30 in American money when she brought these two children here, one of whom, as I say, was kept a dark, deep secret because he was injured and he would not have been able to be admitted at Ellis Island when they came to this country. So she disguised his injuries and no doctor would treat him because he was a Jewish child, and it was just...
No doctor, where would treat him?
In Europe.
Until he got here.
Until he got here, he was never treated. My mother-in-law treated it with clean rags.
Okay, now, about what year are we talking?
David was born, we think, in 1918, so I think this manifest is dated 1921.
Really?
I'm almost positive that's the date. But as I say, I'll be glad to bring it in.
At that time, he couldn't be treated because he was Jewish?
Not in Europe.
Not in Europe.
Not while he was in Europe. Not until he came to this country.
What made your mother-in-law come to Louisville?
She had a sister. She didn't come to Louisville. Oh. My mother-in-law lived in Staten Island, New York, and she married sometime after she came here. David was put in an orphanage because her sister could take care of one child but not two. So he would go home on weekends, and during the week when my mother-in-law was working, he lived in an orphanage. So when she found a man willing to marry her and support her two children, she married and they moved to New Jersey. And David went to school there and later to Indiana University, then to the Army, then back to Indiana University. And when he went back to New Jersey, he discovered that there was a place called the Jewish Welfare Board. And the Jewish Welfare Board had a placement agency. So he went there to find out about jobs. And he found out that there was one available in Louisville, Kentucky, and one in St. Louis. So this was in 1948 or 49, I think, like maybe 49. And he and his friend, who had gone up there together, a friend with whom he had graduated from college, flipped the coin and decided that the friend would apply in St. Louis and he would apply in Louisville.
Because there was a lovely young lady waiting for him.
Well, I don't know if she was lovely and I don't know if she was waiting, but she was over the hill. By that time,
oh,
I was really an old man. Oh, I was, by those days' standards. I was always very much aware that if my mother had been living, she would have been heartbroken, or I would have been married. One or the other would have happened, because I was 28 when I got married.
How old were you when your mother passed away?
I was 24 when my mother passed away.
And your father?
My father was 19.
Oh, uh-huh.
My parents reached 53 when they died, but they died 5 years apart. My father was 5 years older than my mother. So my mother would just never have allowed me to stay single all those years.
What would she have done?
She would have found me a boyfriend, or she would have found a friend who found me a husband. I mean, she just wouldn't have permitted it. And my kid sister never married. And we used to joke about it all the time, because this could not have happened if my mother had been alive. And we couldn't have broken her heart and have done those things. But it was well advised that I waited. And
y'all been married how long now?
We'll be married 39 years this April 12th. And David came to work at the YMHA.
It is a beautiful date, April 12th.
I know you have a special sentiment
too.
Of that. And as a matter of fact, I have to tell you that I selected the date. I had two choices, April 12th or April 19th. And I have a friend who was married on the same day you were, the day that President Roosevelt died.
Really?
And I chose the date of their anniversary because theirs was a very happy marriage. And I decided that April 12th was a mazel tov day.
It was a beautiful day and a made for very happy marriages.
They seemed to have felt that way too, so we selected that date. And as I said, David came to work at the YMHA, and I was working there at that time. I was working in the Armed Services Office. I came to work at the YMHA in 44. And so I was working there when David came there. And he says that the reason that he asked me out the first time was that there was a lovely lady who used to work there who all of us old-timers would remember, Renetta Mayer.
I remember.
And I have to tell you that I have in my possession a watch that Renetta Mayer willed me.
Really?
When her cousin came here and told me that it was in her will, we gave her a watch when she left the YMHA. And it's engraved on the back that it's from her friends at the YMHA.
How long did she work at the old age?
She left there before we came here. So I think my watch is dated 1948, something like that. 48 or... No, it would have been later than that. We moved in here in 1955. No, I think it must be dated 1950.
When you went to work in 1944 at the old YMHA, how many of the, what you would say, the older staff, the remembered staff of the HA was
still
Lawrence
there? Well, Cook was the executive
was
director,
there?
And then he was drafted, and then he came back. And in the interim, Al Erlin, who was at that time the director of what was called the Jewish Welfare Federation, which is not what we think of as the Federation now. Al was, the Jewish Welfare Federation was at that time what is now the Jewish Social Service Agency. There were a couple of other legends on the staff at that time. Ralph Flumbaum was the business manager, I think he was called, or something to that effect. And Pauline Pearson was working there at that time. But my office was a separate one. I worked for what was then the USO office. And they tell me now that they forgot to tell me that the war ended, so I never left. Because actually, I went there just as a temporary job until the war ended.
I was going to say, I didn't know there was a USO office there.
As a matter of fact, Louisville's claim to fame is that the USO really originated in February 1941. The Louisville YMHA developed an Army and Navy committee before that date, when the local communities were asked to establish Army and Navy committees, which is what they were called then. We already had a committee in place, beginning with the draft, the minute there became a military conscription, and Jewish soldiers were sent to Fort Knox. Our Jewish community organized and set up a committee to serve Jewish servicemen before it was a national effort.
May I ask you, because I remember my mother talking, or our pictures maybe I've seen, of from World War One. Didn't the Jewish soldiers come to the HMN?
As a matter of fact, yes. That's why the YMHA had this kind of history and knew exactly what to do. In fact, there are pictures here on the wall in this very room where we are of World War One. Arthur Kling, who we all remember so fondly, was the JWB worker, the Jewish Welfare Board worker at that time, stationed at Camp Taylor, which is the predecessor to Fort Knox, which was at that time, it became Camp Knox.
Annette, you worked at the YMH, at the Jewish Community Center, and you worked at the YMHA. Tell me some of your memories of the HA, as we used to call it, while you were growing up.
I think it's funny because I think I've used the statement, and it's true. I grew up at the YMHA, and I grew old at the YMHA, and I am, thank God, continuing to grow old here. But my early memories are of living on first in St. Catherine, but then I was too young. Then we moved to Second and Hill, to 110 West Hill, and sometimes walking, and most of the time getting rides there to the YMHA, to Girl Scouts.
At the
YMHA, yes, I remember that Helen Ruth, she was Schatz at that time, was one of my scout leaders, and Frances Wasserman, now Shaken, was one of my scout leaders.
And this was, I don't remember the girls having a scout troop, I remember the boys always having
I remember. As a matter of fact, I remember thinking that I always wished I were pretty like Rena Spector. She is now Rena Marcus and lives in Frankfort, Kentucky. But she used to wear her scout dress, scout uniform, to school every Monday, and she looked so pretty in it, and I was always so disheveled not nearly as good.
Well, okay, tell me about school, and then you talked about the HA and the scouts. You said you went to Englehart.
I went to Englehart, and then my family moved to Second and Hill, and I went to Cochrane for just 6A, which is just half of the year of the sixth grade.
And then where'd you go to high school?
And then I went to
junior high school.
To Halleck Hall, which is now Manual. And my schools don't exist anymore.
Cochrane's still
there. Yes. Well, Cochrane, I understand, is closing, by the way.
Well, it was supposed to be.
It was an old... I was going to say about my early memories of the YMHA, though. We used to go
Let me go a little bit farther. Yes. Did you graduate from Halleck Hall?
Yes, from Girls High School.
Then did you continue?
And I continued at U of L. And never left Louisville. That's never been one of my ambitions, to leave Louisville.
Yeah, I'm a Louisvillian way back, too, so I could appreciate it.
As a matter of fact, I was discussing with somebody just the other day that there was a day when it was a claim to fame to say, I've worked at the same place for 47 years. Now it sounds like somebody totally lacking in ambition. That's how long I've worked here. But, you know, now it sounds like somebody who didn't have the ambition, and I didn't.
Definitely. Wait a minute, you could hold a job.
Yes, I was not a fly-by-night job holder, that's for sure. But the thing that we were discussing, and it's really true, when we went to Arts and Crafts at the old YMHA, It was down in the basement. The classes were held down in the basement of the old YMHA. And I thought that an integral part of a crafts class was to have water leak from pipes and have, really, I thought that was how you softened your clay.
That's funny.
Because we were, oh, later we got very fancy and we got a handmaker lounge down there, which meant that I think the pipes were covered with asbestos, which now makes everybody shudder. But in those days, they were all exposed pipes. It was a basement with a what we called a kitchen. And I think the war brought about some of the renovation because we used to have our soldier brunches down there.
I remember serving at the brunches downstairs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There are pictures of those down here in what then became the Handmaker Lounge. The lounge was named after Stuart Handmaker's father, who had died very young.
And that's where all the dancers used to be.
Exactly. Well, the reason they had to be down there was that originally the auditorium in World War II was turned into a dormitory.
Oh, wow.
There were not enough places for soldiers to sleep in the community.
You mean the main auditorium?
In our main auditorium. And then when the crowds got too big for the Handmaker Lounge to accommodate the dances, the gym became the dormitory. And Knesset Israel and Brith Sholem, which were in the immediate vicinity, became dormitories. They turned over their auditoriums for dormitories. And soldiers who came in early enough on Saturdays could buy their beds for 35 cents and be assured of a place. Yes, for 35 cents and be assured of a place to sleep. So they...
Is this when you started working?
Yes.
I started
out with the USO, right. And we went through a succession of directors, and one of our staff members, Margaret Friedlander, later became the dance instructor at the old YMHA. She now lives in Tucson. But that should be somebody, because you had a boy, but you had girls.
I have girls.
Did they get taught? Because little boys didn't go to the dance school. But anyway, Margaret Friedlander was also on our soldier service staff. And we initiated something that was known all over the country. We had something called USO Show Stars. Morris Simon, of blessed memory, was the impresario who dreamed up this idea of getting entertainers, semi-professional and professional entertainers, who adhered to pretty strict standards.
Was this Simon related to you, buddy?
No, but they were. It's interesting because neither of their names was Simon when they lived in Europe.
What was
but
their
they
name
were
when
from
they lived
the same
in Europe?
Shtetl. My father's name was Zinman, T-Z-N-M-A-N.
Yeah.
He came to this country as Zelig Zinman, and by the time my grandmother got here, he was Jacob Simon. That was his anglicized name. I don't know what the other Simon's name was. But Morris Simon, Leon Simon, still lives here. Toby Waterstone was one of those Simons.
Mm-hmm.
And Morris Simon was very much interested in music. He was the originator of our Jewish Community Center Orchestra, our YMHA Orchestra, which later grew into the, and I know I digress, but I can't resist telling about Morris Simon because he was a very unusual man. And he... originated our YMHA Orchestra, which later became the Louisville Orchestra.
I think it's a shame that more people don't know that. There are just maybe a few of us that are privileged to know, because our Louisville Orchestra is outstanding.
Well, I do understand that this is part of their permanent notes now.
Oh.
Cantor Portnoy used to write their program notes. And I once contacted Cantor Portnoy and asked him if he were aware of the origins of this orchestra. And at one time, there was a history being written, and he told the person who was writing the history to call me. And this lady was not Jewish, but she was kind enough. Her husband is Dr. Burkhead. I never met her, but I talked to her on the phone. And I gave her this information, including Morris's name, because it was very important that people know that Morris, who never read a note of music, was called Mr. Music when he died.
Really?
The headlines in the paper said, Mr. Music died. He was a very perceptive, very kind man who never married, and he did more to encourage more musical education than probably any one person in this community.
How interesting. I did not know
that. He paved the way for many, many young people to have music lessons. Mm-hmm. And Morris Perlmutter, who is now known as Mari King, who lives in Las Vegas and unfortunately has had a stroke and is unable to play now, but a very, very talented violinist, said that when he went for auditions, the first time he ever had a pair of pants and jacket of the same material were bought by Morris Simon, because he sent him on auditions and wanted him to look nice.
Did he have, you said he didn't marry, are there any of his relatives that still live in
Yes,
Louisville?
Leon Simon is his nephew,
that, yes.
And Toby Waterstone mm-hmm. is his niece, and he had another sister and brother who never married, with whom he lived until they have all passed away now.
Wasn't that over 47 years? I doubt if there are many people in Louisville that you do not know or you have not had contact with somewhere along the way.
Old timers. Louisville is changing like every community.
But how come the population of Jewish people is still 9 or 10,000,
well,
the same as when
thing.
I went to Sunday school?
It's a funny thing, Betty. I remember two almost contradictory statements. When I first started working in the Jewish community at the YMHA, there was a very, very prominent man, an attorney here, Charles W. Morris. And Mr. Morris was the founder of what is now the Federation, by the way. It was the Louisville Conference of Jewish Organizations. He was also nationally and internationally prominent. He was on the national board of the National Jewish Welfare Board. When Henry Wallace was Vice President of the United States, he stayed at Charles Morris's house when he came to Louisville.
Really?
He was a very, very prominent man. And he had an obsession about taking a Jewish census. He didn't believe that it was a proper thing to do, and he thought that getting any kind of an accurate, or so-called accurate number, would be an instrument for anti-Semitism.
Really?
And pretty much what Charlie Morris said went. But somehow, some way, by contacting synagogues and that sort of thing, I remember very well the story that the Louisville Jewish population was 7,500. Now that would say a guess, not anything like a scientific study. In later years, we were told that it was something around 9,000 after World War II. And I'm like you, until this very day, I hear everything from 9,000 to 9,500 to 10,000.
Yes.
But it's the same number, whatever it is. Nothing has changed. But I guess people have left here almost in the same numbers as they have arrived here.
Well, I know what you mean when there's so many new faces that you don't know.
There are indeed.
And yet there seem to be so many Louisvillians who are natives like we are.
But think back to
and who have been, you know.
How many natives you associate with. Now, I think about your very closest friends, and so several of them are.
So many, many of them are.
Is
yes,
that right?
See,
I'm not really, having worked here in this transient society mm-hmm. at the Jewish Community Center, I find that sometimes I'm the only native around. And I can't remember yesterday, and I don't remember what I want to do 10 minutes from now, but I do remember back to the old days.
Well, you know, and it's not, I don't feel like they're old days, really, but I do have several friends, and you'll look around and you'll say, yes, you know, we're all native Louisvillians, and then we'll say to this one, but you won't remember you weren't born here. And she said, but I've been married and have lived here for 42 years.
But you know, I have a friend who used to use the expression, she has passed away now, Pauline Dobson, whose husband for many years was the director of the Jewish Vocational Service here. But she used to say, she was here for over 40 years, but if you can't use your maiden name in Louisville, you're considered a newcomer. And it's really true that she had been here well over 40 years, but I considered her a newcomer. I mean, her parents weren't married here. And
well,
she wasn't
times
married
that,
here.
I mean, except for the fact that you are exposed to so many people. I know that I have to sometime identify myself by my maiden name.
Oh, no question
you
about
know.
It. No question about it. In fact, it amazes me that I've lived long enough to do what I swore I would never do. When I would meet a child when I was a little girl, and I would tell my parents I met so-and-so, like meeting Betty Wells.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother would say, what's your mother's name? Well, first of all, in my day, you never heard the first name of your friend's mother's.
That's
they
true.
Were Mrs. Somebody.
That's right.
So I certainly didn't know her maiden name. Now I can tell you your mother's maiden name was Myers, but I
Absolutely.
Certainly didn't know it as a child. But now I know the family and I can associate it. And that's how I go back. And I amaze myself because my parents used to do this and it sounded like writing history books. And now
but it's
I
important.
Find myself saying, well, you know her. Her mother was a Myers.
Oh, but see, this is exactly what we're doing this project for. We want to trace our heritage back, not only to the ones who were born here and whose parents were born here, but from where they came, and as long as we can do it and put it on tape, maybe our children won't want to know now, but maybe in 20 or 30 years, they'll want to know where the people from Louisville came, from where they came, because we have put this off too long.
Yes, unfortunately, I want now to know some of the things that I never bothered to know when my parents were living. And it really is too bad because I lost the opportunity to know about
yes.
Their families and about their origins.
Well, this is like roots, and we want to find our roots. And so maybe 40 years from now, somebody will play one of these tapes and say, oh, that's very interesting. Those are my roots.
Exactly. And we do have that in common, particularly in Louisville.
Yes.
I think Louisville is unique because we can... when we developed this archives room, the room in which we're
mm-hmm.
working now, it was because of our early, early roots that this is the third oldest continuously operating Jewish community center in the country.
Well, that I did not know either.
Yes, this center was incorporated 101 years ago. Only the 92nd Street Y in New York and the Pittsburgh Y predated us. Now we once organized in 1868, but I'm talking about continuous operation.
Tell me, you said it was once organized. Do you know offhand the people who started?
We have that information. I don't
you do.
Know it. I don't have it here. I know that I.W. Burnham was one of them.
Yes, I think I've heard that.
This is all included in the in Herman Landau's book, Out of Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
And it lists the man who met at the old Addas Israel, which was at that time Addas, A-D-A-S, Israel.
Was it really?
Temple. And they discussed the need for a YMHA, which was at that time patterned after the YWCA or the YMCA.
Mm-hmm. You were telling me about going to scouts at the old
yes,
HA.
Yes, and we had arts and crafts classes.
Mm-hmm.
We had dramatics classes, mm-hmm. and we had...
Did you ever take gym?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, but I was the biggest failure.
Oh, no, not any clumsier than me.
Oh, come on.
Do you remember the handsome, wonderful gym director?
I remember Harry Cohen.
That's the one
oh,
I mean.
Of course I do. Harry Cohen was at the old YMHA when I first went
there. I wondered
there.
If he still was.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when we talk about the Harry Cohen days and the gym. I have to tell you that when we were so far-sighted that we had that wonderful track, the old building, and when we were building and consulting with architects from all over the country for this building, which we began occupying in 1955, so I guess we started our studies in 1952 because I think we started building in 1953. And there was consideration of building a track in this present gym. We were told the tracks are passe.
Oh, really?
That nobody builds tracks now.
And is it used at all?
Oh, is it ever. It is such a popular thing, but I think it's interesting. It probably cost us as much to build this track. Now it cost to build this whole building. We built,
really?
In 1955, we built and furnished this building for $1,250,000. And as you know, this most recent refurbishment that we did in 1988, when we dedicated and rededicated in 1988, cost us $5 million.
Is that something?
So that was with this big sturdy building already in place. This was just refurbishment. So if we had really acted on our leaders' impulses, as we did in many cases, which reminds me of something else, and again, I digress.
Well, I want to know, as you're digressing, the various titles you've held since you were employed as the USO director.
When I went to work for the USO initially, I went there as a secretary. Then I became the program director. And then in later years, our directors became area men, and I became the local director because they traveled areas,
mm-hmm.
and I became the local director of the Armed Services Program. And then when USO went out of existence in 1964, I became the a half-time Armed Services Director for the center, and half-time I worked for what was then the Bureau of Jewish Education as administrative assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the job of what we now call Adult and Cultural Arts, it was Adult Activities at that time, director became available, I became the Adult Activities Director. And then it's been maybe just about 5 years that I've been the Membership Director.
That is your title.
And that is my present title.
Does David still have anything to do with your husband with the center?
David is very much interested and very active. David is what he calls semi-retired. And semi-retired means that he's retired and I'm not. So he calls himself semi-retired. But he is a very willing volunteer for our center. He's very much interested in the phys ed aspect and in health and phys ed. Was his undergraduate degree.
Oh, really?
So he's very much interested and is a very willing volunteer.
Tell me one other thing.
Good slave labor.
Really, it's great. Cheap too, I bet you.
Yes.
Tell me, have any of the other members of your family ever worked at either the YMHA or the center?
Oh,
is there anyone else in your
family?
There
is someone else, as a matter of fact, who started as a high school girl, and thank you for asking, as a counselor.
Much.
I appreciate that. I do too. My niece Jay, then Heinerfeld, now Sparber, started as a high school girl, first a junior counselor and then a counselor at what was then Camp Rickery, what is now Camp Chavarim. And Jay, like her auntie, worked her way up very slowly. And many years later, after high school and after college, came back to work here as the camp director. No, actually, she wasn't camp director originally. She was a unit director, and then ultimately as camp director, and then as director of the family program, and finally as the director of the children's department. And she worked here until 2 years ago. I say sorrowfully that she chose to leave here a couple of years ago. But she's also very willing slave labor.
Is Jay outgoing in any way?
Oh, you could say Jay has many of her mother's characteristics, and I appreciate your asking, because my sister Lorraine, having been gone, it will be 25 years this June, may have been forgotten, and she shouldn't be, because Lorraine was extremely outgoing. Jay has that in common with her mother. What she did not learn from her mother was her mother's softness and gentility. Jay is not soft and gentle.
She can be.
She is good. Jay is very good. She really is. But she's not soft-spoken, and she's not sweet and gentle, but she is a good, kind, caring person.
But she has so many attributes that are strictly Jay.
Well,
no
let me
one else
tell
can
you,
do them but
and this
Jay.
Is for the record, one of her attributes is she will never dance with your son. Do you know that?
Oh.
And do you know the reason she won't dance with your son?
She told me.
Because Leslie Abramson never asked her to dance at a bar mitzvah party. And when they were older and Leslie came over and asked her to dance and she said, "No, you didn't dance with me when I needed you, and you're not going to dance with me now."
It has not interfered with their friendship.
Oh, it's a romance. It's a beautiful romance. He really is one of her best girlfriends. She loves him like a girlfriend.
Truly wonderful friends. And you mentioned something, and I'd like to put this in about Jay. I went to Israel, and I was down in Beersheba to visit Cantor and Sarah Pernick. And I had seen them for about 10 minutes the year before, and this time I was determined I was going to spend more time with them, and I went there to take them to lunch. They had me, and I said, "I'll only come if Janice will be there." And she was, and my son had been very unhappy because I hadn't taken any pictures of Cantor and Sarah, so I took pictures for him. And when I'm talking to Janice and she wants to know everything about Louisville, she said, "Oh, I know that. And I said, "How do you know?" She said, Jay wrote me.
Yes, they have a beautiful friendship that has continued over the years. The Pernicks were very good to Jay when my sister Lorraine passed away. Their home was really her haven.
Well, they were just good people. And I know we sound like we're babbling, and we're really not. We're doing Louisville talk.
Well, it's important that the Pernicks get mentioned, and I'm pleased that you were able to weave them in because they were an integral part.
Well, when I got congratulated for my son's bar mitzvah, I said the congratulations really go to Cantor. I mean, they're truly wonderful people, and I think everybody loved them so dearly. What congregation do you and David belong to?
I belong to Attis Desheeran. We have belonged since we've been married. My sister Lorraine and her family joined when they married. And as I said earlier, my parents joined Attis Desheeran the day after Rabbi Gittleman.
And who married you and David?
Rabbi Gittleman married David.
Of course, Rabbi Gittleman married Shelley and me also. I mean, he was...
In fact, I told Rabbi Kling, and it's true, Rabbi Kling of blessed memory. It's hard to get accustomed to saying that, his death having been only so recent, it's just a month ago. But I told him that he really let me down only one time in all the time I knew him, because I intended to hate him because he replaced Rabbi Gittleman. And Rabbi Kling made it impossible to hate him. And I was such a fan of his. He was such an unusual gentleman. And belonging to Attis Desheeran during the time that he was the rabbi is a privilege that I don't think any of us can take for granted.
Well, I mean, you know, and it's been your congregation for a long time, so that's
yes,
what you know.
Yes, these are my people and this is my place. I do want to tell you, Betty, because, again, you were one of the, quote, Highlands girls, and I wasn't.
I didn't get that till the fifth grade.
Well, I was much older than that. But I have to tell you that one of the sad things in my life, when I think back to the old days in the old neighborhoods, I lived in a wonderful neighborhood where Reva Jean Schoenberg, who was my dearest friend who died in childbirth.
I remember
probably
it very
now.
Very well.
Almost 50 years ago.
It's
45
not.
Years ago.
Not that, because I was pregnant with Susan when she was pregnant. Simon was pregnant with Freddie. And
really?
We were all expecting within about 3 months of each other.
So how long is that? Less than
40 years. 40 years.
Well, Reva Jean and I were very, very dear friends, and Reva Jean named us the Second Street Gang.
Oh, really?
And because they all lived on Second Street. Now, I didn't quite make it. I was half a block from Second Street.
Reva Jean lived in the apartment.
Right, she lived in the Wyoming apartments on 2nd and Galbert. And at one time, Beverly Greenberg lived there, and Elaine Brill, and Shirley Wells. All of these girls lived there, but I was allowed to be, even the Goldens, Frances and Doris Golden, who lived on 1st and Galbert, were allowed to be a part of the 2nd Street Gang. But the
There were some boys that lived there.
Yeah, oh, there certainly were. But even some boys who lived on 3rd Street, like Booby Rosenberg.
I couldn't tell you about Booby. He lived in those apartments you're talking
the
about.
The Sherman apartments he later lived in.
Because I remember when his father was in politics and they used their balcony for someone making a speech who was running for office.
Yeah, his father was the garbage man, we used to call him.
He was in charge
of the sanitation department.
But
we used to tell Booby, kind children that we were, that his father was the garbage man. Anyway, Reva Jean named this group the Second Street Gang. And let's say some of us who lived half a block off Second Street were allowed. But the sad part of my life was I never lived on Madison Street. And we thought that was paradise because everybody who lived on Madison Street and on Preston Street, but mostly Madison Street, got to work at Waterman's. And I never worked at Waterman's. And that really, I guess, has marked me for life. I might have been a totally different person if I had ever worked at Waterman's. Waterman Simon's father, Louis Simon,
absolutely.
Gave jobs to every young Jewish kid.
He definitely did. Yes, I know.
But I never worked there. I
think I know why. Because you were too young.
Maybe, but I never lived on the right street. I think you had to live on Madison Street where Mrs. Saltzman lived.
Well, my great-grandmother lived close by, I think. I'm not sure.
Well, maybe that would have qualified you. I had no family who lived there. And this was really a very sad thing in my life. I felt very cheated because they knew things. And there was another place that if you didn't work at Waterman's first choice. But it helped if you had ever worked at Ben Klein's. Ben Klein had a grocery store on Preston and Jefferson. And if you couldn't work at Waterman's, then it was nice if you got to work at Ben Klein's. But somehow you had to live in that area, and we never lived in that area.
I didn't know that. I really didn't.
See, you lived in the Highlands.
No, I lived on 1st Street across Valley Hall when they were building it.
Well, I know that one time I went on a Saturday afternoon, and don't ask me how this could possibly have happened, but Frances Golden and I went all the way on the streetcar to Alta. Arthur Isaacs lived on Alta.
Mm-hmm.
And we went all the way there, and there was a restaurant, someplace on Bardstown Road, someplace near Bonnycastle. It was called the Her Shop.
The Her Shop?
The Her Shop is what it was called. And she was then Babette Frank. She is now Babs Pearlstein.
She had a birthday party across from me.
Well, she had a birthday party there. And we went to her birthday party at this restaurant on Bardstown Road, wherever it was. And then we found our way all the way to Alta. And that was really going way up in the Highlands at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that we really had arrived.
How old were you? 12 maybe?
Probably.
We used to go to luncheons and we could play bridge.
Oh, sure, lunch and bridge were the fun things. Canary Cottage was downtown that time. And we used to go to lunch and bridges at Canary Cottage. In fact, I remember my 13th birthday party was a lunch and bridge. And it turned out, who had air conditioning at that time? And it happens that was probably the only warm November. Well, there was one other warm November, but there was one of the few warm Novembers in Louisville's history. And we had to play bridge outside because it was too hot to play inside. But I remember another warm November was my 16th birthday. And I got a leopard coat for my 16th birthday and had to wait way into December to wear it because it never got cold enough to wear that leopard coat, which, by the way, I still own.
I have a beaver coat that was given to me by my grandmother and my Aunt Yetta and my Uncle Lee when I graduated from U of L. I graduated from U of L midterm, as I did everything else midterm. I got to have my picture taken, and I still have the beaver coat. And whenever it was real cold or the heat went out off in our house, I would put on my beaver coat, and I'd meet Shelly at the door, and he'd say, uh-oh, what's wrong? Then he said, there's got to be something magic about it. And I said, it's because it's so warm and so soft. And it was freezing one day. I said, he was cold. And I said, let me put this around you for a napkin. He said, no wonder it's the softest thing I ever felt. So you've got your coat, and I got mine.
Well, I had my coat remodeled when I was 56. It's 40th birthday, and as I told you, I was a skinny little girl, so I could not fit into the same coat, but I had leather inserted in that coat, and
really?
I still have my leopard coat.
And you know,
but
leopard
Jay's
coat.
Children, well, Jay's
definitely.
Children won't let me wear it.
Because you're not supposed to wear leopard.
They're afraid that I'll get shot because some conservationist will not know that this was before the days when leopards were an endangered species.
I know, but you could say it's fake fur and just enjoy it for all your worth.
It really is too bad not to get my money's worth out of it, because that's
your money.
It probably cost my parents over $100 in those days.
Probably a little bit more than that. Annette, really, this has been a fun interview. I don't even feel like it's an interview. It's just a conversation back and forth. I want to thank you very, very much again for all that you've given us on tape. Is there anything else that you can think of that you want to say?
I just want to say thank you to you, Betty. I think that it's a marvelous project that you people have undertaken, and I feel so strongly, certainly not about my memoirs, which haven't made any great
but
contribution.
Yes, they have. They're Louisville memories.
But I think it's important that we preserve Louisville jewelry in every possible way.
Well, Betty Bronner said to me last year this was her idea. And what did I think about it? And the minute she said, I said, oh, that is the greatest.
Well,
the
I
very greatest. And all of us are having so much fun and learning so much about the level we thought we knew everything about.
Well, I can't wait to listen to the tapes myself, but I have to tell you that generations and generations of Louisville Jewry will be very grateful to you, to Betty, to all of you people. I know that it's an imposition on your time.
Oh,
and
no.
You must get so tired of hearing this.
Oh, no,
but
no.
Thank you ever so much for having included me.
Each person adds something else. And you added, among many things, how your uncle got to Louisville. I've never heard, and it's what was...
United Highest.
Highest.
Hebrew Immigration Aid Society.
See, this is something I never
heard. I think
it
still exists, but it may have another name now. But I don't think so. I think Highest still exists in some form.
Because other people have come here for different reasons that I've interviewed. Some of them because they had come from the same area or whatever. They knew somebody who could give them a job. But this is just another facet.
Well, see, a lot of these people went, when they came to this country, went to Hyatt in New York and were directed to what was called the Jewish Educational Alliance, which was on Clinton and Grand on the west side
in
New York. And they helped these people. And, you know, we think we're doing something new and innovative. We have acculturation programs. They, in their own bumbling way, had
acculturation.
It wasn't.
What
it certainly wasn't. That the people learned English there. By the way, we had English classes here. That was one of our first classes at the YMHA when it came into being, teaching English to immigrants.
Oh, was? Yeah.
We have a picture here on the wall of that also. I know I'm winding up again.
No, you're not. I mean, you're just adding to a great interview, and you're giving more meaning to it.
Well, this agency integrated these children. It's what we would later think of as settlement houses, but it was a Jewish settlement house. And they directed these young people toward jobs, toward preparing themselves for jobs, being acculturated to the extent that they could, and learning the English language. And as I say, ours was patterned here in Louisville, our YMHA English classes, of which there are pictures here on the wall, originated as a result of these classes in New York.
That's great, and thank you again so much.
Thank you, Betty, and I wish
a
kids would show up.